1 Peter chapter 5, the Bible says this, "Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he might exalt you in due time, casting all your cares upon him, for he cares for you." I'd like to talk to you this morning about facing anxiety in your life, and I have to confess that I had planned to preach this on Wednesday, so I didn't change my sermon last night after the game. I had plans, but in any case, what a game, huh? Holy cow. But I want to talk to you about facing anxiety. And the reason I want to talk to you about it is not because, again, of the game, but because anxiety is something that I think everybody faces. It's something that people were dealing with 3,000 years ago, because when you read a lot of the Psalms, they are filled with anxiety. They're filled with worry. We come here to a passage written 2,000 years ago where it talks about the cares that we have. I think Ernst Becker, the great 20th century psychiatrist, who was not a Christian, by the way, says something to the effect that it is the storm that rages beneath everything. Anxiety is the storm beneath everything. And so he saw that in his studies as he looked at people, this sea of worry, this sea of anxiety that churns deep in our hearts, deep within our souls. And so I'd like to talk to you about what the Bible would say about worry, about anxiety, about cares. And I'd like to give you four or five sources of anxiety or worry. And I'd like to sort of begin with sort of the shallow and then go to the deeper, because I think the passage that we just read points out a couple real spiritual reasons for worry that can get deeply ingrained at a very deep part of you that are very difficult to root out. But I'd like to talk to you about some of the shallow reasons that we face every day, and then sort of work our way beneath the surface. And so, what produces anxiety in my life and in your life? Well, one of the things that produces anxiety that the Bible would point out is a lack of planning. Lack of planning. I think that's the point in the book of Proverbs in chapter 6 and chapter 30, where the Bible says, don't be like the sluggard, but be like the ant, because the ant is a planner. If you have a picnic and it's the summertime, the ants will show up, but they're just not laying around talking to each other. They're taking bits of food away. They'll take the sugar, and then they might come back with some friends, and they might take a whole potato chip. But they're working, and the reason that they're working is because they plan. They know that the storms are coming. They know that the cold weather is on the way, and so they know that they've got to work today to meet the needs that they see in the future. And oftentimes, our anxiety comes simply through a lack of planning. It comes because we're not in that moment as smart as the ant, the Bible says. That's where some of our anxiety comes from. See, you might have anxiety today because you got a paper due tomorrow, but you got your syllabus 3 weeks ago. You knew the paper was going to be due tomorrow, but you didn't plan for that, so you got anxiety today. Dave Ramsey, the great a financial guru, says that you have to have your emergency fund, right? You got to have money put aside, because if you don't have money put aside, if you're not saving for the bad day ahead, what happens is every struggle that you have is doubled in intensity, because not only do you have a car wreck and you've got anxiety about the car wreck, but you also have now anxiety about how you're going to pay the mechanic. You don't just have anxiety about your health problems, but you also now have anxiety about the doctor's bill because you don't have any money to meet those needs. And so he says you have to be planning ahead. Oftentimes anxiety comes simply because you and I aren't planning. Now, I'm not going to push that too hard because my wife is here. And if my wife was given a mic this morning, which she is not, she would say, yeah, that sounds just like a man. Try planning your day with 3 kids at your house. See how much planning removes your anxiety. Because you can't plan your way through the day when you got 3 kids running all over the place. And that's probably true to some extent. I'll give her that much. That's probably true to some extent. Planning will only get you so far. Now, there's another source of anxiety the Bible points out, though, and it's not a lack of planning, but it's a lack of priority. It's a lack of priority. You get that, I think, from a place like Luke chapter 10. Jesus is traveling. He comes to the town of Bethany. Martha comes out with her sister, Mary, her brother Lazarus, and says, I want to cook you a home-styled meal. You haven't had a home-cooked meal, fellas. You come to my house, I'm going to cook you a meal. They go home, and she decides to cook for 16 people. Things go haywire in the kitchen. Mary's out there listening to Jesus teach, but in the kitchen, there's a storm. The bread's getting crispy. The chicken ain't getting done. Everything's going by way of disaster. Smoke's coming out the back door. She comes out of the kitchen. She says to Jesus, make Mary come help me. And Jesus says, Martha, Martha. Martha, Martha. You are worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary has chosen that good thing, and it will not be taken from her. There's a couple ways to take that passage, because when it says one thing is needful, it could go with the second part of the sentence. One thing is needful, and Mary has chosen that one thing, and that won't be taken from her. In other words, the one thing that is needful is to sit at the feet of Jesus and learn. But that phrase could also go with the first part of the sentence, which says, Martha, Martha, you are troubled and worried about many things. One thing was needful. In other words, Martha, who told you to cook a 5-star meal? We would have been okay with sandwiches. We would have been okay with something small. Sandwiches and sugared tea. Unsweetened, no good. Sweetened tea, pardon me. Sweetened tea. I'm looking for something there. And I couldn't find it. Sweetened tea. And sandwiches. You've been okay with that? Who told you to cook all that? You are worried about too many things. Sometimes that's us, isn't it? There's no priority in our lives. We care about too many things, so we are worried about too many things. Have you ever gone to a ball game? And maybe it's a high school football game. And everybody around you is getting nervous because the game's getting real close and they're doing this number, you know, and doing this number. And you're just sitting there enjoying your hot dog. And you don't even know what quarter they're in. You don't care about the game. You're just there because you wanted to spend some time with your grandkids. But see, they care, so they got worry. You don't care, so you don't have any anxiety in your life. I had that growing up. I was a crazy Dan Marino fanatic. I love Dan Marino. And I know stuff about Dan Marino that's ungodly. I know, you know, he started in 1983, threw 20 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. 84, he threw for 5,084 yards, 48 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. Followed up in 85 with a subpar year of 30 touchdowns, 22 interceptions. Came back strong in 86, threw 44 touchdowns, 23 interceptions. But I know it's an ungodly amount of stuff I knew about Dan Marino. But when Marino retired, he was the record holder for most fourth quarter comebacks. He had 35. Brady and Manning passed him later on. But he retired as the all-time leader in fourth quarter comeback. The reason that he was the all-time leader is because he was a lousy first half player. Because again, 22, 23 interceptions. He could throw the ball really well to the other team too when he wasn't playing so well. So he had to come back oftentimes in the fourth quarter. So to be a Dan Marino fan meant anxiety. I remember watching the game once, and I'm walking around, you know, looking at the TV, and I'm walking and pacing and talking, and my dad comes in with a cup of coffee, and he sits down on the couch, and he says, so what inning are they in? And I was spastic. I was Kramer. And I said something like, it's innings in baseball. It's halves in soccer. It's periods in hockey. It's game, set, match in tennis. And it's quarters in football. You know anything about football? What inning are they in? I don't care. And he enjoyed his cup of coffee while I paced in the living room. You care about too much. That's why you worry. Some things aren't none of your business. They just aren't your business. You don't need to put your nose in there. It's taken care of. It's somebody else's area of responsibility. It's fine. It doesn't need your attention. You don't need to care about that. There are some things that you don't need to worry about when you leave this service because they're none of your business. It's nothing you could do anything about. It's not a problem that you need to deal with. So you can go on and sing a happy song. Now, some of it's my problem, it's my business, so I'll go worry for all of us. You don't need to worry about it, see. You care about too much. There are things in your life that you shouldn't give that much time to. You have to prioritize. So sometimes it can be a lack of planning. Sometimes it can be a lack of priority. Sometimes it can be a lack of guardedness. You're not guarding yourself like you should. Everybody ought not be able to speak into your life. Their opinion doesn't count with you. That's what Paul said. Remember, we looked at that maybe a week or two ago in 1 Corinthians 4. He's got the past. He's done a lot of things that he regretted, a lot of bad things. And he says, 1 Corinthians 4, verse 3 and 4, he says, whether any human or any human court judges me is a small thing to me, because I don't judge myself. It is the Lord who judges me. Now, what's he saying? He's saying when people come up to him with negativity, when people come up to him talking like they think they know what's going on in his life, it doesn't mean anything to him. It's a small thing. In fact, he doesn't judge himself. The Lord has saved him, has removed his sins from him, and that's good enough for him. And other people's opinions really don't come into his life. He's guarded on that issue. Everybody shouldn't be able to speak into your life and get you all anxious. It should. They don't know you. They don't know you. They don't know your struggles. They don't know what you've been through. They don't know how you live. Their opinion of you really doesn't count. Doesn't count. Listen to me. When you watch the news, you're going to have anxiety and worry if you watch the news too much. You are. You can't watch. I don't know if you watch CNN, MSNBC, or Fox News, but watching the news for 4, 5, 6 hours a day is a recipe for worry and anxiety. It is. Their opinions about what is going on shouldn't matter that much to you. You know what? There was a guy that I used to really listen to that could really make me, you know, worry, because in fact, I got some books. He's a commentator. I'm not going to tell you who he is because I'll give away my political identification. But you can probably guess my political identification. But in any case, I got books and that he wrote. I really cared about his opinion, and he's got this daily podcast, and I listen to his daily podcast. I still listen to him some. But on election day, 2012, he predicted Mitt Romney was going to sweep Barack Obama. And I quit listening to him. Because he was way off, man. He was way off. And I still listen to him, but he doesn't give me word because he doesn't know everything and he doesn't know a lot about what he thinks he knows. Because he could have called that one right if he had tried. It wasn't even close. Before you listen to some newscaster get you all stressed out about something, why don't you go back to Election Day 2016 and find out who they thought was going to win the election? Because I tell you, 95% got it wrong, which means they don't know everything that they think that they know. Go back and study some of their opinions. Go back and see how smart they really are. Go back and look at some of the clips, some of the crazy things that they say, because you're going to find them. They shouldn't be able to speak into your life and get you all bent out of shape like they do. Facebook. Enough said. Yeah. Enough said. Yeah, if you stay on Facebook for 5 or 6 hours a day, you will have worry and anxiety. But don't let those people speak into your life. They're on Facebook because they don't have a life. Every hour they spend on Facebook is one less hour that they're reading or doing something productive, so they don't know what they think they know. That's right. Sorry. It's just the way it is. Don't let those people get under your skin. You know, you'll have stories on Facebook, and I got to do this because every now and then you'll see a story posted, and it's like, ooh, well, that doesn't sound good. You know what I got to do now? I got to go to Google, which isn't the best place to go either, and I research the stories that get posted on Facebook if it causes me anxiety. And you know what? Most of those stories are wrong. It's a quote taken out of context. It's something that I should not have given. I mean, they made a big headline out of nothing. And sometimes you have anxiety and worry in your life because you allow people who have no business speaking into your life. You have people with opinions that don't matter a hill of beans, and you allow those opinions to come into your life and get you stressed out. And your worry is because you're not being guarded with what you allow into your heart and mind. There's a couple other reasons here, and we're getting to the passage now. Sometimes it's a lack of planning. Sometimes, again, it's a lack of priority. You care about stuff you just really shouldn't care about. Sometimes, again, it's a lack of guardedness. You're allowing people to influence you that don't know what they're talking about, and they don't have any right to speak into your life anyway. Their opinion really shouldn't matter all that much to you. But there are a couple other reasons. A fourth reason comes from this passage, and it is this, that you are seeing the reality of the situation apart from the mighty hand of God. You see that in this passage, he says, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. Now, the mighty hand of God takes you all the way back to Exodus, because it was with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm that God delivered the children of Israel from Egypt. And so that's the reference. He's bringing up what God had done. And he says, so you need to humble yourself under the mighty hand, the same hand that brought the children of Israel out of Egypt. You need to humble yourself under that mighty hand, because that's the hand that moves the world. And oftentimes, if you only see reality, but you don't see the mighty hand, that is a recipe for worry and anxiety in your life. And that's what happened to Moses, right? He's out there feeding the sheep, burning bush. Bush talks to him, says, Moses, I've heard the cries of my people in Egypt. And Moses is probably saying under his breath, it's about time, it's been 400 years. And he says, so I am going to send you to deliver them. I don't know if Moses had a stuttering problem before that moment, but he started to stutter, and he said, no, not me. I can't do it. And that was a rational response. Egypt was the superpower of its day. Moses had gone to school with the leaders in Israel. He went to college with those guys before he fled. He knew that there was no way they were going to let 2.5 million slaves walk out of the country without a fight. He knew that this was an impossible task. He was one man going up against an empire. He was going to be dead before he got to Pharaoh, just bringing it up. And he was afraid. He had anxiety. He had worry in his life. And what Moses saw was the reality of the situation. Moses was right in what he saw, but he had not counted on the mighty hand of God working with him. And you're going to have anxiety apart from seeing the mighty hand of God working in your life. You know the word I hate more than any word in the English language? I just hate it. And the minute I hear it, it like hits me in the back and it goes up me, and I just want to shiver and say mean things to people. It's just an awful word. It's like nails on the chalkboard when I hear this word. It's the word just. Hate the word just. I hate it when people say, you know, if we would just, no. It's not that simple. I think if we would just, no. What you're about to say is stupid. Stop right there. It's not about just. You know what? They've been fighting in their marriage all these years, and if they would just know, it's not that simple. Life is never that simple. It's not about if we would just, any major problem you see, it's not one thing. So don't say just. It's complicated. And that's life. Life is complicated. I mean, again, conflict, I say this sometimes, conflict looks so easy if you're in the grandstand, but it's so hard when you're on the field. When you see people in conflict, that's like you sitting in the top of the stadium saying, he's open, he's open, he's open. No, the quarterback's got three people in his face and he can't see that. It's not simple for him. It's simple for you because you're looking at it from the outside, but it's not simple inside. Easy to look at the problems of the world. It's easy to look at the Jews and the Arabs who've been fighting over the same piece of property for 3,000 years and say, if they would just, it's not that simple if you're over there. Again, you can look at a marriage and they've been fighting and the problems are real and they've got 5 years of verbiage that they've said to each other. They have intertwined families and it's tough. You can't look at them and say, if you would just, it's not that simple. It's not, life isn't simple. And if you see life for like it is, you'll be anxious. If you see the complexities of life, if you see the complexities of your marriage and your family, if you see the complexities that are in the nation today, if you see the complexities of the church, you will worry and be anxious because you are seeing it for what it is apart from the mighty hand of God. So you have to see God at work. You have to be able to look at that thing and say, I see the problem, and it's a mess, and it's a disaster. But I also believe that one word from the throne of heaven would fix every problem in the world if he gave it. You have to see it in light of the mighty hand of God. Fifth point, and this will be it. Sometimes, and this is what this passage is driving at explicitly, sometimes worry and anxiety, and maybe all the time in some way, comes from pride. It's pride that produces the worry and anxiety at its core. If you want to get to the very, very base of pride, sometimes it's planning, sometimes it's what you hear, but at the core in the human heart, it's pride that produces the worry and the anxiety. And that's what this passage is saying, because again, he's saying, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, that in due time he will raise you up. In due time he will raise you up, casting all your cares on him, for he cares for you. Now that's one sentence, and it's a repetition. What does it mean to humble yourself under the mighty hand of God? It means to cast all your cares on him. That's what it means to humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. Well, what does it mean to cast all your cares on him? How do you do that? Do you just write them down and throw them? I mean, how do you cast your cares? No, you humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. That's how you cast your cares. And this is a restatement. This is one sentence. It's one ideal. It's not two ideals. It's one ideal. It's a repetition. The first part is saying the same thing as the second part, only in a different way. And isn't that true? What this passage is saying then is that if you have worry, it's because of pride. And to get rid of your cares or your worries, get rid of your pride. If you'll get rid of your pride and humble yourself, you will be able to get rid of your cares that are troubling you. Now, how is that so? And here's why. The reason beneath the reason that we have worry and anxiety is due to human omniscience. Pride is me saying, I know how it should go, and it doesn't look like it's going like I think it should go. That's how worry happens, but that's pride. I have to say, I know how it should go. The minute I stop saying, I know how it should go, then you know what happens? The anxiety goes, because then I'm not saying, I know how it should go, and it doesn't look like I think it should be going. See, I think Keller said something like this. He said, worry is what happens when you don't think God will get it right. Bitterness is what happens when you believe God got it wrong. If you believe God got it wrong, that will produce bitterness in your life. But if you're looking at it and you say, I don't know if God will get it right, that will produce the worry in your life. And that is pride. Now, I've had to deal with that in my own life, and I'm really preaching to myself today. I'm glad you're here, but I'm just preaching to myself. Here's what I have done most of my life, and what I'm still tempted to do, and what I'm still wrestling with. I know that verse, and the way that I would apply that verse in my life is to say, no, I don't understand. I don't know how to get there. The problem's too big for me. I need God to help me with this problem. I don't know the path that I should take. Unless God shows me the direction I should go, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I got to that point, but I stopped short, because what I held on to was this. I don't know how to get there, but I know the destination. And that's a problem. Because oftentimes we think, well, I'm humble. I'm saying, I don't know how. I don't know. I don't know the path. I don't know which way I should. I don't know. But you're still holding on to the final destination. You know what you think it ought to look like in the end. And you got to give that up too. Because that's pride. And I've told people, I preached on Esther a few months ago. Esther was all for me. I haven't had the stress level not nearly that I've had since I preached on Esther. Because essentially what comes to us in Esther is, you don't know the destination. And every pastor, when he thinks about the final end of his ministry, there's some level of success involved in some way numerically. No pastor says, you know, if I go to that church and things work out like I want, I'm going to leave them with about a fourth of what they got now. That's my goal in life. That's what success will look like to me. No pastor thinks like that. Every pastor wants to be Joshua. Every pastor says, I want to take them into the promised land. But that's not always the calling. The calling is sometimes Moses' calling. And you know, Moses was wrong twice. Moses didn't think he would get them out of Egypt. But then when Moses got them out of Egypt, he surely thought he'd get them to the promised land. But he was wrong again. He camped in the wilderness for 40 years and got them ready for Joshua to take them on in. Moses didn't know the final end of his ministry. Abraham sought a country that, and he didn't know where he was going. Abraham had no idea where he was going when he left Aram. Had no idea where he was going. It was just, follow me and I'll get you to a place that you'll like. Esther had no idea that when she became queen, that God was calling her to be a revolutionary figure and to save her people. Didn't know that. When Ruth left and came back to the country it wasn't the country of her origin, it was the country of Naomi's origin. She had no idea what God had in store for her. The disciples had no idea what the end of their ministry would look like. And until you give up saying, I know what it will look like in the end, you're still proud. And again, it's one thing to say, I don't know the way, but you have to say, I don't even know the destination. I don't even know what success looks like in the end. And until you do that, see, you got pride bouncing around in your heart. Let me help somebody who's 20 here today. You know why you're anxious? You know why? You're anxious because there's a master's program that you think you got to get into, and you're anxious because you want to be married by the time you're 25, and if life works out, you'll have your first kid by the time that you're 30, and you'll probably buy a house about the time you're 27, 28, and you're anxious because, oh, it doesn't look like that, because the college, I don't know if the college will let me in, and I'm 20 years old, and I'm not keeping steady company with anybody. And listen, if you would throw away what you think your life should look like, you'd throw away a lot of your anxiety too. If you would just say, hey, you know what? I got an idea of what I want to do in my life, and I'm going to go to college and pursue it, and I may get in the college I want. I may not, but that'll be okay. And you know what? I may be single at 35, but if I have the Lord, that'll be fine too. I like to be married before that, but you know, things happen, and you know, I'm not going to settle or anything. And this is a career that I would like to have, but you know what? The vast majority of people aren't doing what they went to college to do. That's probably going to be me. So I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get this degree. But there's only a slim chance I'm actually going to work a job that relates specifically to my degree. And that's okay with me. The Lord loves me. I've committed my life to Him. And He's going to get me to the destination of His choosing. Now, I'm going to make plans. But I'm going to be like James says. Every plan I make, I'm going to say, if the Lord wills. If the Lord wills, I'm going to move in this direction, and I might get there. If the Lord wills, you know what? If you could say that, if you could give up saying, I know where it should end up, you'd get rid of so much of your anxiety in your life. It's the pride of saying, I know what life's got to look like to be successful. I know what He looks like. I know the job that I've got. And if I don't get into that school, I'm going to be cursed. Listen to me. In the end, you can't control it. There are forces beyond your control anyway. But if you're in the Lord's hand and you see the Lord's mighty hand at work in your life, you know what? You can go forward and cast your cares on Him. Humble yourself. Throw yourself with abandonment, John Wesley said, on Him. And you know what? You can live as worry-free as you can live. Now, worry's always going to be there. It's always going to be a temptation. There's always going to be planning issues. There's going to be some anxiety. Tennessee, you know, Tennessee's still got to play Alabama this year. So you got some anxiety. Anxiety going there. There's always people who are attacking you. There's always people trying to make their opinion matter to you. And sometimes they get an opinion through and it leaves you restless that night. There's going to be anxiety coming into your life from these sources. But the root that really, it churns beneath the churning is this human omniscience saying, I know this is the way it goes, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen like I think that it should happen. Again, the Bible says, if you'll get rid of your pride, you'll get rid of your worry. To the degree that you can throw your omniscience away, to the degree that you can throw away your intellectual pride, you can throw away the cares that are consuming you. So it says, cast your cares on Him. Humble yourself, or cast your cares. Same thing. Casting your cares is humbling yourself. And again, you do it under His mighty hand. I love the phrase, you can stand. It'll encourage me to stop. I love the phrase there in the middle, and I'll leave you with that. It says, and in due time, He will raise you up. In due time, He will raise you up. Do you believe that about your life? Do you believe that He will not leave you downcast forever? Do you believe that He will not always leave you in the pit? Do you know that it will not always be the way it is for you? And you may be going through a valley. You may be going through an anxious time. You may be going through a time where you're staying up at night thinking about things. And you've lost some of the peace that is in your heart because of the things you're going through. Do you know that if you can cast your care on Him and say, Lord, I don't understand. I don't know. But You have a mighty hand. And when I have gone through what You have intended for me to go through, You will raise me up in due time. You will raise me up. I can trust Your mighty hand in my life. If you can do that again, you're casting your cares on Him. You're casting your cares. If you have a burden, a need you'd like to come and pray about in these final moments as we sing, you bring it to the Lord.